The Monday Morning Tech Chat Show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I think I might be coming in a little quiet. I'm going to turn up my mic just a bit, and someone in the chat tell me if this is too loud or if this is better or what's going on here. Yes, welcome to the show. I, of course, am Juan Carlos Bagnell, the Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series, and the QA stands for question and answer. I like to have an interactive conversation and discussion over the tech topics and the tech news, and one of the main reasons why I like to host my show on a Monday. So we've had a little time to digest the news of the last week. Maybe there was a breaking news story that happened over the weekend. We can kind of dig our teeth into that. And it gives us the opportunity to follow these news stories a bit more aggressively and make sure that we're keeping track of what's going on in our sphere of tech influence. So I want to kick this week's show off. First of all, just seeing we've got some great chatter already happening in the live chat. I see Matt Tyler, Aditya Anil, Gadgets Chat, LFA Reviews, Solus Geek, 20 Miles 1975, Gary the Fireman. We've got some from regular faces joining this week's show. We're going to have some frustrating news to talk about. My news block is actually kind of aggravating this morning. So, unfortunately, for those of you who have been longer time listeners, you understand the crankiness and the soapboxing. For those of you who might be tuning in fresh, who might be new to this, apologies for some of the ennui that we'll be digging into. Oh, we already have an over-under on housekeeping. Gary the Fireman is saying housekeeping over-under 15 minutes. And Sam saying it's going to go over 15 minutes. We actually have a bit of housekeeping to get through this week. So that might be a pretty good estimate. Or at least if you're going to play the Price is Right, saying over on housekeeping might not be such a bad jam. I want to jump in first of all, though, that here in the United States, this is Veterans Day. So happy Veterans Day. This is that time. Over the last couple of weeks, if you've been listening to the show, you know, we've been having issues with fires and with some natural disasters. And it's just a regular plea, not just when there's a disaster, but to go and recognize those people in your community who help keep your community functional, first responders, ambulance drivers, firefighters. And Veterans Day is, for as gimmicky as our holidays can feel sometimes, I do like having that day on the calendar just as the reminder, that moment where we can at least just think and consider and remember the sacrifices that people make for different lines of work. I come from a military family. My dad's retired Air Force. And it's not the easiest lifestyle. Even for my dad, you know, he retired as a lieutenant colonel. He worked mainly in sciences and communication and lasers and optics. And he had a project of his was made fun on The Daily Show. Jon Stewart made fun of the airborne laser project. It was a C-130 with a laser in the nose. My dad worked on the laser system for that airplane. And also just it meant that our family moved around a lot. And it meant that, the notion of putting down roots or where is home or having childhood friends that you grew up with is a concept that's a little more difficult for me and my siblings. The friendships that my mom struggled to maintain as we moved around. But then also just the experiences that we got to have, getting to see more of the country, getting to meet more and different types of people, being educated in a variety of different schools. There were these amazing perks that came along with it too. So for those members of your family, those people in your circles of family and friends, today's that day. Today's that day. Just, it's okay to look at the calendar and see a formalized holiday. And actually participate with the sentiment of the holiday. So from Some Gadget Guy to your family, thank you for your service, and thank you for your participation, and thank you for your sacrifices. From someone who got to see firsthand what some of that looked like, respect. It's not always the easiest choice to make, and it's always nice to know that there are people who have made that their calling. So at least on this side of the live stream Twitch equation, know that it's acknowledged, it's seen, and it's recognized. Okay. Oh, and we also have from Matt Tyler, happy Veterans Day, everyone. We just had our Remembrance Day over the weekend. Let's see. Aditya Anil, happy Veterans Day, everyone. Much respect to all those who risk their lives so that civilians like us can go about our daily lives. Sam, 20 miles, 1975, Marine Corps birthday. And today, thank you for you and for everyone's service. From Soulless Geek, the honor is to serve. Soulless Geek, big nod. I don't know if Ronald Collins is going to be jumping in, but Soulless Geek and Ronald Collins on the Some Gadget Guy Discord, I know, are veterans. So many big thanks, much respect. Okay. And not like video game respect. Like, I'm not saying press F. Sorry. I just realized, like, okay, so much of the video game nomenclature and terminology is infesting my daily conversational skills. Let's get into some housekeeping so that we don't run this for too long. Boang Byte F question mark? It's a terrible joke from Call of Duty, where Call of Duty sort of manipulates your emotions by trying to make you feel something, but it does it in a very sort of regimented way. So you're at a soldier's funeral, and the game just tells you press F, and that will make you pay your respects. So it's a long running video game. It's terrible. Again, it's because, like, Call of Duty is sort of built on the recognition of the people who serve in the armed forces, while also it's a video game. So you kind of have to sensationalize and dramatize what real people actually go through. It's art and commerce and video games and social commentary, and sometimes they don't always gel. So that, I feel, was rightfully criticized back in the day. I forget which version of Call of Duty it was, but it felt overly cynical to stand over, a soldier's memorial, and then you push one letter on your keyboard and your character in the screen pays his respects. It's clumsy. Let's say it was clumsy. Oh, Boang Bike, Advanced Warfare. It was COD AW. Okay, getting into some housekeeping. I actually had quite a few things go up, and I feel like the success and failure of some of the videos and editorials that I worked on last week is kind of guiding me in that direction, where I still want to review gadgets and I still want to review products, but I also kind of want to dig a bit more philosophically into the discussion of these gadgets rather than just blueprinting the exact same sort of review regiment. There's a first impressions video, and then a month later after an update I try and do a review, and then there's a camera video for the Patreon, and then like 6 months from now I try and do a follow-up. Like, I kind of want to tell the story of a gadget a little bit more than just Exact same video process for every single phone that comes down the pipe. And again, kind of like how this was motivated with the Pixel 3a, the Pixel 4 is also, it's an interesting beast. It is a more complicated story than just, oh, Google should have done this and now it's not as good as a phone, so it's less worth it for the money. But we ignore similar criticisms on iPhones and Galaxies, but Google is a smaller player in their own operating system ecosystem, so it's easier to pick on them for making decisions that don't jive with sort of the hardcore Android enthusiast community. It's weird, okay? So I'm having a hard time getting to my finished script for the Pixel 4 without it just being me soapboxing and pontificating. One of those things. Let me go into the. This is on somegadgetguy.com. Oops, did you really just jump ahead in my housekeeping? All right. Let me. So I put out this video. It's super frustrating when we talk about something like air gestures. So the Pixel 4 XL has a radar chip, the Soli chip, and it can sense movement around the front of the phone. We have been playing with air gestures for a long while, back to the Galaxy S4. So I compared three different versions of how air and hand gestures can work. So the title of the article, Pixel 4 XL versus LG G8 versus Galaxy S5. Air gestures are hard. This is not to excuse what some people might consider to be a gimmick, but this is to illustrate alternative interactions on a phone are extremely difficult. Going back to the Galaxy S4, Galaxy S5 days, there was a ton more functionality in what Samsung was trying to do, but conveyance was terrible. The specific apps and interfaces were very regimented. So you would have one interaction in one place. And then I think logically, someone might think, oh, well, if I can swipe to the side here, I should be able to swipe to the side there. And it doesn't work that way. It only works in very specific instances. And you have to have a very specific kind of hand choreography to accomplish the task. Later, LG followed that up. LG and the G8 put a time of flight sensor so they could make face unlock more secure. And with a time of flight sensor, you have a very detailed tracking camera, a 3D tracking camera. So they tried to do something fun with alternative gestures. But to differentiate what's you sort of reaching for the phone versus what's you trying to control the phone's volume, again, running into the same problem, less so with conveyance because they tell you, the phone tells you when it's activated the time of flight camera, but the interaction has to be very specific. You have to kind of do this hula hand dance to get the G8 to do anything. So the Pixel 4 actually fixes both of those issues. It's still conveying when the Soli chip is being used. There's like a little white ghosting strip at the top of your notification shade, and they've simplified the gestures so they work pretty much everywhere at any time, but they only work on a couple things. You can only switch, you can only skip tracks in your music app, and you can silence an alarm. But one of the key functional differences is being able to reach for your phone and it starts to wake up the screen. Like I just reached for my Pixel and the screen turned on. It's already organically reacting to you before you've even picked up the phone. It's sublime. It's very subtle. Some people might decide that that's not worth it, but you shouldn't fault the interaction being simplified is an improvement. I find it frustrating because in 1 year, we've had the exact opposite reactions to hand gestures from many of the same tech reviewers. So all of the people that were panning the G8 for being too complicated in how you interact with that system, And not acknowledging that you need to differentiate hand gestures. If the G8 just randomly started messing with your audio every time you waved your hand in front of the phone, that would be really bad on a phone with a headphone amp that can blow out your ears. Like, you need to be deliberate in how you interact with a feature like that. But of course, that functionality, too complicated, and I used the phone for 4 days, 4 whole days before it went on sale to the public, and I made the definitive conclusion that it's not worth it for the monies. I've actually gotten pretty good at LG hand gestures. Like, it's not that hard, it just takes a little bit of practice. Then a lot of those same people complaining that, well, the Pixel 4 doesn't do enough. And you're like, this is exactly why this is such like tech geeks are looked upon as being so insufferable. It's too complicated and it does too much and you have to learn too much to interact with it. And, oh, but this over here is way too simple and way too easy and like it doesn't do enough. It should be doing more to impress me. And I disagree. I feel the main crux of this is we need to nail the action first and then find out how we can expand the functionality. I think a beautiful example, if we want to talk about companies that failed with an alternative gesture, is Apple. And I talk about that in the video too. So 3D Touch crashed and burned. Alternative gestures, conveyance, the functionality. And the most successful aspects of 3D Touch were the simple things, like, you know, moving your cursor when you were scrubbing through text by force pressing into the keyboard works way better than long pressing on the space bar for the newest version of iOS. Getting rid of that is frustrating. It was better on my iPhone XS than what we currently have with Apple getting rid of 3D Touch. So I made a whole video about it. I kind of just summed it all up for you, but you should check that out. Just realize, like, I'm basically just regurgitating the whole video for you here. Yeah, my Pixel 4 review is going to be a very interesting beast. Okay, moving on. I had to pick a fight with one of my favorite YouTubers. It's not pretty. This is the ugliest, bloodiest war one could imagine between two people who care very much about their scientific process and their methodology. But Gary explains, I had to take him down, you know, even when I adore a YouTuber, just that flying elbow right off the top rung. So Gary put out a video, The Problems with Network Speed Tests. Gary's reasoning in this is very, very sound. A lot of people have requested that he add things like network performance to the way that he tests phones' performance. And he made a video commenting on it. I mean, that's one of the things that I actually really like about his style of commentary and his channel is, he doesn't just ignore and he doesn't just not do it. He does incorporate the question into some of his commentary and then he explains the process. I don't feel enough YouTube viewers pay attention to the process. Like, there's a reason why we're putting things together in a certain way, or there's a reason why we're trying to analyze things in a certain way. And so Gary's reasoning here is extremely sound. If you use a network speed test app, this is me paraphrasing, by the way, there are too many variables to consider for network performance. So you use speed test, right? And you push the button and it gives you a score. And it's always, almost always, like the maximum score of whatever that network can support, which I doubt very much. But you have very little control over what server you're going to. You can kind of point to a server and say, hey, I'm in California, I'm in Los Angeles, send me to a server in San Jose, and we'll measure that time and that difference. But how that information actually tracks from my location in Los Angeles to San Jose can take a myriad number of different routes, different interconnections, different nodes. There could be different congestion at different times of day. It's very difficult to use a one-stop shop app and then act like that is a consistent measure of performance, and that only gets more difficult as you factor in LTE. Network performance, is there a weather condition that's impacting tower signal reliability? Is the node oversaturated? Are there way too many people on the receiving end of that data packet? It's not as easy as any of these speed testing apps make it out to be. But I disagree in the sort of philosophy of that meaning we can't test network performance. So in the article, and I've linked it in the live chat, my article is we can test some network performance. And so this is what I do when I'm looking at phone performance. For the last year, I've been trying to maximize my home network. I have a NAS, I've got a mesh router, and I can control a lot of the variables that happen internally on my network. So I don't have to worry about network congestion on a node 100 miles away. I am running reception and Wi-Fi tests all internally on my home network. So I connect to one specific node on my mesh router. I can stand in the same place. I can download the same files. I can time the same interactions, and I can go from phone to phone to phone to phone. So I tested my iPhone XS against a OnePlus 7T as an example of how we might compare and contrast this data. And I think you can see some differences, and those differences have been fairly consistent as I've tested Sony phones, Samsung phones, LG phones, OnePlus, iPhones of various types. Over this last year, there's an emerging trend. I can't say it's definitive, but we can use it to start predicting what phones might have reception and signal issues and what phones are going to perform better in challenging conditions. So I wrote up my process, and this is actually something I would hope other people externally of me might take into consideration when they're also testing their own gadget, doing their own reviews on these gadgets. Because if we start to collect samples and data from other sources, we can compare and contrast, and then we can also come to some comparison points that might improve my testing. Like, oh, hey, you're trying to do this one big file download. Instead, if you look at the performance for, you know, a bunch of small files, that might change the performance of Wi-Fi as you're doing this and that. I can't cover all the bases on my own home network, but if other tech reviewers wanted to review this stuff, we'd be able to kind of share notes. We'd be able to point to each other's tests and say, well, this is what's going on. Oh, and I think this is what's happening over here. And this is how I think we can improve that. So that's my gig. I'm actually putting out an article like this because I kind of hope, you know, like a GSM arena. Wouldn't that be a perfect place to start looking at radio and antenna performance? They already have a testing methodology. They get audio wrong, but I bet you they could get Wi-Fi right. So, in all in love, because again, like I said, Gary Explains is actually one of my favorite channels on YouTube, because I like cranky old guys who like to dig into the nuts and bolts of things. And so I feel like Gary is a kindred spirit in that regard. You know, if you ask someone, if you ask a techie kind of a loaded question, like what's better, this or this, and they don't start off with, well, that's complicated, then I don't think they're really doing their due diligence in explaining technology, technology concepts. Almost everything you will ask me is, it depends. Hey, what about this microphone? It depends. Hey, what kind of camera? It depends. Which phone do you think? It depends. That's the only true answer I feel comfortable delivering when people are dropping these. By the way, I want to make this a bit more of a mailbag and question and answer. We've got some phones to talk about in the second half of the podcast. So have your questions ready, because my answer is going to be, it depends. Gary the Fireman, best toilet paper. Oof. It kind of depends. I'm not a big fan of the mostest, softest, quiltedest stuff, because I don't always feel the cleanest. How about we leave that right there? All right, another bit of housekeeping here. This was a biggie to put together, and I finally got it all sorted where I felt comfortable actually talking about a monster phone. So there's no shocking... There's no shocking conclusion here. We've got the OnePlus 7T. $600. This is an insanely monster performer, upper mid-range bang for buck. This phone is epic. Like, no one is going to question that. So what I felt was important to discuss, and I got a couple comments, like people who were concerned that I was maybe slamming the phone because I really also liked the OnePlus 7 Pro, and that maybe this was sort of an indication that I was only recommending the most expensive phones. But the thing that I found a little troubling about the OnePlus 7T discussion, again, sort of the philosophy of the review, was dismissing all of the differences and all of the improvements that you might find on a more expensive device. If you followed my videos and if you followed my podcast, you would know I don't believe most consumers should be spending more than $400 on a modern phone. If you're tech savvy, you can import, you know, some stunningly powerful phones. And if you're willing to handle some of those compromises in importing a phone here in the United States, you can get insane hardware for $400. What is it? The Mi 9T Pro is currently on sale on Amazon for $380. And it's a capable competitor to the OnePlus 7. But I also felt like so many of the reviews, the early reviews coming out for the OnePlus 7T were hinged more on, here's the OnePlus 7T, we're comparing it against the 7 Pro, and there's no reason to buy the 7 Pro. And that's not a review. That's a comparison that you've already gamed to highlight one phone you think is going to be more popular. Because there are good reasons to still consider, even here in the United States, where we don't get the OnePlus 7T Pro, we're only getting the OnePlus 7 Pro, there are still reasons someone might consider a 7 Pro over a 7T. And it's not as cut and dry as, well, Snapdragon 855 Plus. Snapdragon 855 Plus is greater than Snapdragon 855. That's not how this works. So, So my review seems a little not milquetoasty. It's not like I'm down on the phone. I'm very positive on this phone, but I also kind of want to properly express, like, this is the experience and it's really good, but it doesn't mean this is the only experience. There is no winner or loser here. There are reasons why someone gravitating to this phone is going to be very well served, and there are reasons why shopping above this phone still might be a benefit to someone who values those types of more premium parts and experiences. So it was a complicated review for me to put together. I'm almost like, I want to do like a OnePlus 7T versus Pixel 4 XL video just because the philosophies are so different now. It's not the same one-to-one like with like the Pixel 2 and that era of OnePlus phones. Well, I just recommend OnePlus because it's pretty much the same thing and this is how you do it. I mean, like, it's, there's so much nuance and the company philosophies are so different that the conversation is interesting, not because there's a winner, loser, easy thumbs up, thumbs down. It's not that easy. And speaking of, I also managed to tick off a lot of people on Twitter again. Again, a lot of people get kind of twitchy when I talk about headphones, and it's not like I haven't been reviewing premium recording kit and audio kit for 15 years now. But as 20 miles, 1975, hashtag some pisses off Twitter peeps guy. Boang bite, chi-fi when? LFA reviews, feelings get hurt on Twitter easily. So previous podcasts, like, you got to see how disappointed I was in Apple's design decisions on the AirPods Pro, talking about repairability, talking about longevity. It was after last week's podcast, I kind of just sat in front of my computer here and knocked out an editorial. Point for point, situation for situation, price for price, True Wireless has gotten much better this year. 2019 was the kickstart year for True Wireless to be taken seriously. And I've enjoyed my reviews. I like my One More Stylish. I like my Helm True Wireless. I'm a little concerned. I just got the Huawei Buds. I hope they're good. You know what I want to do in the video? Hold on, just a tangent real quick. Because they're very similar in design to AirPods, right? We've all seen Huawei's earbuds look very much like EarPods and AirPods. So I kind of want to start the video off with, well, I mean, you know, obviously I've had concerns about AirPods, but this has a Huawei label on it, so it's better than Apple. So all of my concerns for AirPods are gone on these because Huawei. And then I want to like hard stop the video and actually act like that was the end of the video. It's so dumb and trolly. But I kind of want to point to some of the people in the iOS ecosystem. It's like, this is what you sound like. You did not rationally consider this product. You saw the Apple label on it. And then you said, oh, but I like it because Apple said it was more convenient. I digress. The video I'm actually trying to point to, neckbands are better than True Wireless earbuds. It's not even close. And I feel like we are sacrificing practicality, longevity, audio quality for looks kind of neat. So in the image, I'm not even leaning on AirPods. This is not directly a commentary on AirPods. In my thumbnail, this is my One More Stylish sitting next to my absolutely gorgeous One More Triple Drivers. The One More Stylish are punchy, convenient, you know, single driver. They sound good. The One More Triple Driver neckband, three drivers, super rich bass. I actually have to roll off the bass. I think they're a little aggressive for me. And they support advanced audio codecs. So you are actually feeding them a higher quality signal. Right now, when you shop them online, these two solutions are almost the same price. I'm getting a little tired of audio reviews that seem to kind of champion the idea that, well, I mean, Gadget Guy, what you have to understand are, you know, people don't care about audio quality on their super expensive headphones. People don't care about that. Like, it's driving me a little bit crazy. Neckbands are more practical. They're harder to lose. LG does have some issues with durability with the way that they do their retracting mechanism, but I still have like years old tone neckbands that are outperforming current True Wireless options. And I found these guys. I mean, like, I thought I'd lost them forever. These are my Plantronics Backbeat Go. These are OG. I got these in 2013, and for at least a solid year, these were in my ears every day. And battery life-wise, they still hang with AirPods today. I ran these guys hard. I was not kind to them. And then I lost them in a gym bag and only found them about a month ago. And they still hang with AirPods. So that's kind of the... Again, I'm trying to express a variety of audio products because my fear is we're going to look at what's cool and trendy now. We're going to invest so much more time talking about those options. Manufacturers are already making more True Wireless. They're easier to lose. The business model is, if you lose an AirPod, are you going to go out and buy a whole new set of earbuds, or are you going to replace that one AirPod? So Apple makes more money on the replacement and not repair costs, because you can't repair them. But we're starting to find like hundreds of these things like falling through subway grates. Like in New York, I forget, New York Transit has already rescued a couple hundred individual AirPods this year. You know, like that's one subway system. That problem is going to compound and manifest as AirPods go on to to, I think they're what, on track for $25 billion next year, something like that. That never happens with a neck band. You pull the earbud out of your head and then you drop it and then it just stays around your neck. Just the practicality of that. Head and shoulders above True Wireless. So, yes, as LFA Reviews concisely states, neckband earbuds are highly underrated. Oh, Hudless Hero, shout out to the OnePlus Bullets. The OnePlus Bullets, especially the Bullets 2. I don't know if you're on the Bullets 1 or the Bullets 2. Bullets 1 were very good. I'm not knocking the Bullets 1. The Bullets 2 are triple drivers for $100 and do that really cool magnetic answering the phone trick. And they do the auto pairing just like AirPods do. And they're $100. It's real good. I was wondering if Gary the Fireman was still using his, because he won my pair of OnePlus Bullets 2 wireless. A couple people saying that the LG Tones were kind of trash. The problem with LG Tones was that they put out so many. So, like, if you wanted the sportier version, they used to do a real hard neck clamp. And those, I do believe, did have some kind of DTS tuning or APTX. I can't remember. But that was a very aggressive tune that wasn't very good for just casual listening. They were built all around, like, you're going to run on a treadmill or you need to block out noise. And the mix was very aggressive. Those were rough. The Tone Studios sounded phenomenal. And they're still some of the earbuds I point to as having the lowest hiss or background air. The newer Tones are kind of a mixed bag. I look at them as being more convenience products than audiophile products. Like, they've got a Google Assistant button that works phenomenal. I can't express, like, you have True Wireless and you long press one ear and it kicks on your assistant and you have this interaction, as opposed to the button on a new pair of Tones works very much like the squeeze function on a Pixel. And it'll read your messages back to you automatically. It's more a tech platform and it expands on the audio functionality of your phone. And they sound good. They don't sound amazing. That to me is, like, if we're going to talk about AirPods for convenience, I still feel like Tone neckbands wreck AirPods in most situations, and that you can get them for cheaper than AirPods 2 in a wireless charge case. But again, longer conversation. Long and short of it, I mean, you could try and argue with me, but you're wrong. Neckbands are better than True Wireless. So, LFA Reviews. I dropped an IEM review today. Wired carbon nanotube drivers are a huge step up in quality. Were those the tin audio? Because I've been seeing a lot of people talk about tin audio. So that was housekeeping. That took way too long. So let's get into some aggravating news stories. Of course, all of the stories, all of the links, everything that we're going to point to, I'm going to try and drop them in the live chat here. And then you can always hit the show notes, somegadgetguy.com, or on any of your favorite podcasting services if you're catching this on the audio stream. But yes, the Tin Audio T4 from LFA Reviews. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. So, hard shift. Getting into the news topics this week. Anyone feel like YouTube's having some problems? Like, this was another sort of rough weekend for YouTube. I've been very critical of many of YouTube's business practices, If you're watching this, if you're watching this right now, if you're watching it live, you're watching it on Twitch, Mixer, Periscope, or Facebook, and you're not watching it live on YouTube. And I don't feel like I had any foreknowledge that something like this was going to go down, but I feel like we could be looking at the writing on the wall. The decisions that YouTube are making as a corporate entity, not always the best for smaller and medium-sized content creators, and now also pretty rough for a larger, big sweetheart of a content creator. I am, of course, talking about the Markiplier YouTube has a problem video. So let's break this down real fast. Markiplier runs sort of a tech commentary, a gaming commentary and game stream channel. He's currently at 24.6 million subscribers. He's a big deal. So he was playing a game during one of his streams where he would have his community hit different emotes to sort of guide or make decisions. They make a joke out of spamming those emotes. So YouTube saw that behavior and saw users spamming emotes during a live stream, and the automated systems at YouTube started banning Google accounts. No warnings, no strikes. You violated a community guideline that no one knew about and instantly started shutting off channels and Google accounts. So it wasn't just like someone spammed some emotes during a Markiplier stream and then their YouTube account got suspended. They couldn't get into their Gmail. They couldn't get into their Google Play content. I'm on Project Fi. It's linked to a Gmail account. That's how I manage my phone. That would shut off my phone. This is a real bad look for YouTube. So at the point that we're at now, we went, I want to say 4 days. Was it November? So a little more than 3 days. So this video went up November 8th, but people were affected before this video went up. So yeah, we're around 4 or 5 days and accounts are starting to be turned back on. But the entire process at YouTube completely failed. So those individuals who had this issue and went to dispute the YouTube system were basically just all shut down. There wasn't really a human element to discussing, like, this was happening on the channel. The person hosting the stream was encouraging this behavior. And, oh, and by the way, I mean, Matt Tyler, Belongbyte, spam those emotes here on Twitch. I'm good with it. We're not streaming on YouTube. So just go for it. I'm not too concerned about emotes on Twitch. I'm super concerned about emotes on YouTube now, and I'm happy to not be streaming on YouTube for this type of story. So anyway, disputes, all of them were summarily dismissed, and YouTube stuck to their decision-making process that this violation was so severe that on a first infraction, people's Google accounts, full Google accounts, needed to be shut down. So Markiplier, I mean, his response was necessary. It was his action on his stream to encourage that behavior that got followers of his channel locked out of their Google accounts. But I also kind of feel that the dramatics, that the play acting of a situation like this is starting to wear a bit thin. We're in a situation now where YouTube is still discussed as some kind of monopoly institution. YouTube hasn't been around that long, and there are other solutions. Markiplier is running a live stream. There are other places he could run that live stream. And he has an audience that would follow him. He has an audience that would back him up. He could easily land a Mixer deal, right? I mean, with 24.6 million YouTube subscribers, I'm sure Mixer would be like, hey, bro, here's some cash. So It's a frustrating situation. YouTube screwed up. Markiplier then takes to YouTube to air his grievances. So we get another one of these videos. Forehead in hand and YouTube has a problem, ... And literally, the next Markiplier video that was recommended to me after watching this was almost the exact same drama video that he did last year. It's almost like there's an anniversary of Markiplier doing yearly YouTube is broken videos. I mean, it's right here on the side, like right off to the side here. When I finished watching this video, this was the next video that autoplayed for me. At what point do we consider a change? At what point do we pull the plug? At what point do we say, hey, you know what? I don't want to do business with this company anymore. And a lot of Markiplier's reactions and theatrics ring kind of hollow. So if you'll pardon, I want to do sort of like a dramatic reinterpretation or a dramatic interpretation of what it felt like to see this. So we've got to set the mood here. So I'm going to try and get that. And it's a little more somber now. So first we got to start with the perfect thumbnail. So maybe not exhaling. I've got a migraine. We'll go with oh, I need Excedrin. That's my motivation for the thumbnail. And you just kind of hold that for a second. So let me fix my hat. And then we're going to jump in. We're going to start the video off as if I just sat down. This is totally organic, totally raw, guys. Totally raw. So here's the beginning of the video. Go ahead and push record. And then we do like a hard cut. Like, so you saw my angst. You saw it. So now we're going to cut to me speaking. Okay, so here was the angst. And now, what up, YouTube? I never like making videos like this. Although I make videos like this pretty much every year. This is hard because I'm outraged. And you can tell I'm outraged. Did you see the thumbnail? I had Excedrin headache. That's how you know I was outraged. So here's the deal, folks. I make a ton of money with this company. I do great. I'm doing business with this company. But this company won't stop punching my friends in the genitals. They just keep doing it. They cut me a check, and then they go to my friends, and they punch them in the genitals. And I'm like, bro, don't do that. What's up? So it happened again. Took a bunch of my friends, punched them in the genitals. And I'm like, stop that. So I wrote another sternly worded letter. I told them, hey, stop doing that again. Nothing more I can do, bro. Nothing more. I'm totally stuck. So I'm gonna keep doing business with the company, but man, it makes me so outraged. They just keep genital punching over and over, man. I just don't know what to, there's nothing else I can do. There's nothing else I can do. I could do business with a dozen other companies that have platforms that would allow me to do the same type of business. But it seems like you're just gonna keep getting your genitals punched. But I'm outraged. And you know I'm outraged. Because I did Excedrin headache. That's for real. Smash that subscribe button. Hit that bell icon. We'll catch you on the next one. And scene. All right. I mean, I'm definitely making light of a very complicated situation. You don't walk away from a channel with 24 million subscribers on it. I get that. But at some point, we need to stop acting like YouTube is this institution and that nothing can compete with it. And especially for someone like Markiplier, where the main reason his viewers got into trouble was for a live streaming action. YouTube is a terrible place to be hosting live streams these days. They got rid of YouTube Gaming. They got rid of Hangouts. Like, why would you go there? There are better tools and platforms to fulfill that in-the-moment interaction. As soon as YouTube started playing games with monetization, with demonetizing my channel, I don't know for certain, but as soon as I started talking about net neutrality and tech politics, my channel got nuked, and it's never completely recovered. Not even close when it comes to recommendations, view time, watch time, and knowing that people are getting notified about my videos. That all evaporated. And then they started playing those games with community guidelines and community strikes, that you could be held responsible for comments that you leave, that I could be held responsible for the comments that you leave. Every single step of the chain since that mass adpocalypse has been harder and a bit more of a wrench tighten and a little bit more of a vice clamp on the types of content that we produce. This is not a good look and a good trend for someone who does actually value building community. So the main reason I got into YouTube was to have interactions and to have conversations about technology, not just to yell at you folks and tell you what to think. Like, again, I host this live stream with a live chat because I need to. If I just sit here and soapbox, it'd be terrible, terrible content. So, there's an opportunity here. Someone like a Markiplier, if he really wanted to put pressure on how YouTube does business and how these community guidelines are constructed, he could make a tough decision. It was a way less angsty and difficult decision for me to pull a podcast that was doing really well on YouTube and move it over to Twitch. My numbers on Twitch, way lower. But I am so much happier with the community interactions, and now I feel a little bit safer that my podcast is actually live streamed on Twitch than if I had continued to keep giving YouTube my business. If we don't like how a company does business, why do we keep doing business with that company? You can write all the letters you want. You can make all of the Excedrin headache videos you want. They're not going to change until they have a reason to change. And as long as people are still going, you know, an outrage video like this is at 3.3 million views. Do you think YouTube's upset about people watching 3.3 million views on a 9-minute video? No, that's great news for YouTube. YouTube and Markiplier get to be news stories that keep people on YouTube longer, and it's better for his channel, and it's better for YouTube. So his grievances aren't going to affect change. And the reason why I wanted to lead with the Markiplier situation is because we also just got the heads up on the new terms of service for YouTube. And again, I have some concerns. And I tweeted this out. This was the primary thing that makes me a little nervous about the direction that YouTube is heading. So if I go back into screen share and to read this off specifically, so we've got account suspension and termination. Terminations by you, terminations and suspension by YouTube for cause. And then terminations by YouTube for service changes. YouTube may terminate your access or your Google accounts access to all or part of the service if YouTube believes in its sole discretion that provision of the service to you is no longer commercially viable. I'm not a lawyer, and I cannot tell you what that means, but I do have a pretty well-researched background on fair use law. So when I read a statement like that in a refined or revised terms of service, and it's super vague and it's super wide open, that to me means that YouTube is probably going to start examining user behavior to a finer degree on their platform and to see what might make sense for blocking people who freeload on YouTube. My fear with that comment is that they're going to start looking at people who use YouTube Advanced. If you use that app, it's an app that gives you some of the benefits of like a premium YouTube subscription. You just have to sideload this cracked version of a YouTube app, or ad blockers. And the number of people that, you know, like, oh, I don't worry about ads because I just, you know, I just nuke them all. And this also goes hand in hand with the changes that they've recently made to Chrome, where they had to back off some of it, but we covered this on the podcast a while back, where they were making it more difficult for people who made Chrome plugins to make the strictest ad blocker plugins that they could. And one of the reasons why I'm on Firefox, there are too many nefarious, poorly coded, or outright malware ads to take a risk when you go to different sites around the internet. But Google is working to try and maintain a certain ad dominance, so it's in their interest to use their browser to weaken some of those ad blocker situations. You put that next to a change in their terms of service that they want all of the viewers of YouTube content to be profitable. That should be a worrying trend. I'm not at that point where I'm saying the sky is falling, pull the plug, run away, don't use YouTube, blah, 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 blah. But man, we got to pay attention to this. Man, we got to keep an eye on this. This is not the direction I think we want to be headed for user-generated content, and especially for all the channels that are having a hard time right now on YouTube. Ad sales are down, ad buys are down, monetization is down, and there are so many more mines to step on than there used to be when I started producing for YouTube. The community aspects have eroded. I don't build the same community like I used to when I started. I don't have the same interactions with community. Even stupid changes like how your comments get stacked and nested make interactions more difficult and more contentious. Everything on YouTube's platform has gotten just that little drop more toxic over the last couple of years. And these two recent developments happening back to back, it's been a rough week for YouTube, just as it's been a rough year for YouTubers. Boang Bai, I need to clip this whole section. The Markiplier, I'm seriously debating whether or not I even want to upload this week's podcast to YouTube, and I might not. 20 Miles 1975. It needs music, like maybe a piano or a slow violin. Aditya Anil sees the thumbnail. Somebody get this man an aspirin. for murder. This was the best time to tune into the stream. So, Soulless Geek, I'm restraining myself from making a corollary to the economy. Aditya Anil, 3.3 million views on a video that is bashing YouTube. Again, I'm not saying that you should take a decision like this lightly, but I want to put this out there twofold. Community is not tied to one social networking app. When YouTube started messing with my channel, I learned right away that there were still people who followed me for me. And man, that linked right up with my favorite people to have conversations with. So moving over to Twitch and getting way fewer views didn't hurt. It didn't hurt. It felt good. I know Twitch has their issues too. And on Twitch, I am doing business with another mega corporation that I have issues with. I'm also co-streaming on Mixer, and that's another mega corporation that I have concerns with. But if we act like YouTube is the only institution and that they should be the only source of traffic, we're not going to like that future. It's fine and dandy to soapbox about competition. But if you don't change your behavior, then there is no competition. And we have all of these amazing resources. I mean, from literally running our own websites again, our own blogs, but stepping outside of the algorithmic vice grip of YouTube and Facebook, the behavioral tracking of Amazon, and even Microsoft fighting us on things like right to repair, like Apple. We don't want to lose these tools. We want to keep them. We want to keep our options open. We don't want to fall into the trap of minor convenience today leading to full-on monopoly tomorrow. So hopefully that's something we can take away, and that's something we can learn from this situation here. And because I'm on Twitch, I'll put it out there again that if you want to spam the emotes, spam those emotes. Right. Let's move on to something else that's also super frustrating. I'm going to blitz through this one real fast. I promise. I know I always lie to you, but there's going to be, this one's a promise. Okay. So hold on. Before I go on to this next one, Mr. Pulp Fiction, is there a real competition? Is there real competition out there for YouTube? My experiences, if you're a live streamer, YouTube is the worst place to do that. If you're engaging with your community in real time, it's terrible. The tools there suck. The community tools are awful. The moderation tools are a generation behind Mixer. Twitch really does have a better platform for interacting in real time and live streaming. When we're talking about hosting video, it's tough. The argument for YouTube used to be discovery. Like, you were a part of YouTube. That means you were organically more valuable in Google search. But with the more recent games that they've been playing, I'm getting less discovery. So if the big argument is you've got this huge platform and you're easier to find on a bigger platform, then YouTube has a great argument to make. If I have to go out there and hustle my own views and reach out on my own social media accounts and spread my videos on all of my other resources and try and leverage Reddit and then hit it up on Twitter and then constantly retweet and then do all of that work to get that traffic to my YouTube video, then YouTube is only video server hosting. And I could probably do that on a number of different platforms or solutions. Like, I could host videos on Twitch. They won't get viewed organically. No one's searching for content like that on Twitch. But again, if I'm having to spread the word myself, then a big part of that is going to be fixed with my own sweat, with my own hustle. It is going to be a change in my platform by the end of next year. I want to devalue YouTube as the sole place to watch my videos. So not only for the live streams going to Twitch and Mixer, but also for the produced content that I make. And I might just look at something like archive.org. Maybe I'll even public domain all of my videos, and you want to cut it up and you want to do something wacky with the video, great. You want to download the video instead of just streaming it, and you can see the full quality of that video without YouTube compression. Maybe that's what we do too. There are options. We need to stop pretending that the benefits of YouTube outweigh the competing options for hosting video on the internet, especially for those that aren't really getting to benefit from the platform YouTube offers people that have million subscriber plus channels. Because I guarantee you the YouTube Markiplier has is completely different than the YouTube I have. So why play that game? Why pretend that that's the better outcome and eventually I'll get there? No. If I'm going to build it myself, I might as well build it for myself. Oh, we got a couple other comments here. From Soulless Geek, part of the problem is that it feels like YouTube, Twitch, and Mixer are starting to do the same thing as the cable companies, kind of getting in bed together. I don't necessarily see... No, I agree with you. First of all, let me say that I agree with you. It's not that I see them all working together. It's that I see them making changes, and then they're examining the changes that the other platform makes. Then the changes that are more financially beneficial, obviously they're going to start trying to mimic those changes too. So it becomes sort of a guided market, and we all eventually end up in sort of the same place. But, you know, there are still some severely different philosophical ideas behind Twitch and YouTube. And that, you know, Mixer and Twitch are obviously going to be fighting harder in the real-time streaming space. YouTube seems to have ceded most of their platform's advantages for having a streaming service. Uh, From Pakostan, something similar should be done for the YouTube problem, but it will take significant amount of time. And none of this is going to happen overnight. All of this is going to take time. But it won't happen at all until we start. When we start making some changes to our behavior, that's when things will start to change. When we wait for changes to happen, those changes will never happen. I'll do something about YouTube when someone else makes a perfect clone of YouTube that does everything YouTube can do, and they do it better, and they give me more money. Well, that's never going to happen. As long as you keep giving all of your business to YouTube, then the problem stays. And Fat Produce, Andrew Wallace, he made it. I love it. Let me take another sip here. All right. Another frustrating story, and I promise I will get through this one fast. This is a follow-up to, I want to say, in the early days of my podcast. I think I did touch on this story because I was doing a lot of PR work with AT&T back in the day. This was especially like from the G2 to the G4 era, the LG G2 to the LG G4 era of phones, like up until like the Galaxy S6. So right before I joined Pocket Now, I had a friend that worked for a small PR outlet, and she did a lot of work with AT&T. And AT&T, I don't believe, treated them super great, but it was a great sort of symbiotic relationship. It was Southern California, tech reviewers were getting access to AT&T stuff, and it was really, really cool. Around that time, we were also fighting those fights with net neutrality, with throttling, and with data caps. And the disclosure of how data networks work. We were just making the transition away from, well, you know, here's your bucket of data, and then you get charged per megabyte. And we were starting to play with rollover data and unlimited data again. You know, like we used to have unlimited data, then we moved to LTE, and then AT&T thought it would be better to charge you for like 2 gigs of data every month as if you bought a flash drive. And here's your 2 gigs. And then when you're done, we'll take what's left and you don't get anything back. So there was a court case that went up in 2014. And AT&T was accused of misleading consumers with unlimited data plans. And this is an FTC investigation that has been pretty much ongoing since 2011. But the main lawsuit took place in 2014 and affected roughly 4 million AT&T subscribers. The FTC claims that people were doing business with AT&T under false pretenses, and that was leading to a consumer confusion situation. That's about the only thing the FTC is good for, is looking at the terms of service and seeing if a company violates their terms of service. If AT&T had just been more forthright in how they were going to throttle or charge for data overages, then there never would have been a court case. All they needed to do was say, well, we say it's unlimited, but if you go over 10 gigs in 1 month, you're going to get throttled. Problem solved. FTC can't do anything. They fully disclosed everything they needed to the consumer. They are doing business in a reputable way. So, almost 4 million people affected. AT&T's fine for misrepresenting their network and misrepresenting their plans in 2014, with problems dating all the way back to 2011, $60 million. $60 million. I'm sure AT&T is going to learn their lesson on a $60 million. I mean, that's got to hurt. That's got to sting. I mean, if I go on Reddit and I look at the myriad number of people commenting on this, like there's this one guy here, who is it? Mr. Malware, who broke down that a $60 million fine, as compared to their gross profit over the last year, it is about 5 hours of AT&T profit. So they lost 5 hours of, not revenue, 5 hours of profit. If I mean, like, people are saying, it's like, oh, $60 million, that's pocket change. Like, if you made $50,000 a year, that would be like you getting fined $17. Like, what the heck? Until a fine like that, leveraged by the regulatory agency that's supposed to be protecting us against businesses not living up to their claims, their marketing claims, until that actually hurts, companies are going to keep doing business like that. That fine isn't even a tax. Like, that's not going to blip on a quarterly report. When they disclose their financials, as a shareholder, I'd be annoyed if they wasted my time to talk about this. So they fined you $60 million? You made that up in 5 hours. All right. You cost me more money telling me about it than if you had just absorbed the costs and moved on with the rest of the quarterly report. Like, that's Boeing Bite in the chat. That's like couch cushion change. And Yogi 9708, what a slap on the wrist. there is no incentive with that for them to change their behavior, and that's why we leverage fines. And especially knowing that for the 3.5-4 million people affected under this FTC lawsuit, that what, 20%, 30% of this legal victory are going to go directly to the lawyers fighting the case. It's going to be put into some kind of fund, and then people will get a check, and it will take like $30 million, and we'll divide that by 4 million people, and that's how we'll partition. Everyone gets like $5. Justice has been served. You paid your AT&T bill, and you probably got an overage for $100 one month because of the way that they do the data. Here's your $5 check for your justice. It's so dumb. So how does AT&T celebrate? I'm sure they're talking about it as if this hard loss and our corporation, we're gonna strive to do better for future. We're gonna tell future AT&T subscribers exactly how we're gonna gouge them, because if you're on AT&T and you have an older plan, like your plan is a little bit older, you might have just gotten a notification that AT&T is gonna change your plan. And they're going to raise your bill $10 a month automatically. They're going to do this for you, and you can't do anything about it. So this is coming by way. I forgot to detail who that last article was from. It was from the Associated Press by way of usnews.com. And now by way of Ars Technica, AT&T switches customers to more expensive plans without asking them first. It's a benefit. They're just going to charge you more money and you'll get a little more data. You get a 15 gigabyte bonus if you're on an older plan. So AT&T is adding $10 to the monthly bills of customers with certain grandfathered mobile data plans and not letting them switch back to their older packages. AT&T is pitching the change as a bonus because it's also adding 15 gigabytes to the customer's monthly data allotment. Enjoy more data, AT&T says in a support document. Starting with your October 2019 bill, you'll get an additional 15 gigabytes of data on your mobile share plan. This bonus data comes with a $10 price increase. And there's no way to opt out. They just jacked your bill. But they did it for you because it's a perk. It's a benefit. It's great. From Fat Produce, this type of AT&T shenanigans is why I'm glad I'm on Cricket. I get to use AT&T's network, and the reduced speeds are worth it to me to not be under AT&T's slave driver yoke. From Mr. Pulp Fiction, are there contracts in the United States available without a 4G gigabyte limit? I don't believe that is the case anymore. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not very well versed on corporate plans. Like, there might be, but seeing as how even Verizon throttled firefighters here last year in the middle of fire season because they were using too much data, I don't think there are any consumer or business plans that are truly wide open. I think everything has some hard limit or some cap. And then they start slowing you down, if not charging you more. And it's kind of why I stopped pretending. I'm on Fi. When I'm on a Pixel, Sprint's coverage is not the best, but most of the time I'm just on T-Mobile's network, and you get billed for what you use. And most of the time I stay under the billing cap. So like, I think if you go up to $90 a month based on how much data you use, then it just becomes sort of an unlimited plan after that. But then if you go out to 15 gigs, they start to throttle you. So you get like 4 gigs of grace and then they slow you way down. Most of the time, I don't think I've hit the cap since my last international trip. So yeah, when I was in Taiwan, I wanted to back everything up, and I just expected like, this is going to be an expensive month. I'm going to use it. And I think I beat the cap, but I only went over like 500 meg. So it was worth it because I had everything backed up. I had all my files. I was uploading all of my daily vlogs and videos and stuff like that. But I didn't go so over that I really got my money's worth. From 20 miles, 1975. You can actually opt out by canceling your AT&T service. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon and my Audible campaign, I can hook you up with a $20 voucher if you're shopping a new OnePlus, or you can grab a ton of great video games for cheap with Humble Bundle Monthly. I also have a teaser image on that page for my upcoming Mega Pickle coffee mug, which will hopefully be available for purchase soon. SomeGadgetGuy.com, link at the top of the site, support Some Gadget Guy, and hopefully you find something cool, something you might like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Oh, people talking about some of the 5G developments and stuff like that. Mr. Pulp Fiction, here in Europe, it's 30 euro for unlimited 4G prepaid no contract. Yeah, the carrier stranglehold that we have here in the United States and the competing technologies that all deliver the same functionality, it's going to be a while. I mean, there are definitely some additional costs when we look at how big and wide and spread out the United States is. But then we also have to acknowledge that a lot of this was built on taxpayer funds and sweetheart deals for zoning and public infrastructure anyway. So allowing them to profit like this is frustrating because we should have two regulatory agencies that can actually affect some change at the corporate level. Right now, the FCC is completely toothless, and the FTC, they're doing their job, but that's the limit to which they can do their job. So it would be nice if we had anyone else in this government right now actually trying to fight for end users and not just rolling over for mega corporations. 20 miles, 1975, we have a 30 gigabyte data pool, but it's for 5 lines, including 2 18-year-olds who are doing ish all day on their phones. Yikes, that's pretty tough. Yogi 9708, damn, the mobile data plans in the U.S. are expensive. In my country, you get around 20 gig of LTE data for around $10. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, an average month for me is around 40, and I might use 2 gigs of mobile data, and I kind of like the challenge of hunting for Wi-Fi. Like, I've always been that guy who liked war driving anyway. But, you know, there's also the, if I can save money, I'll try and save money. And, you know, that's kind of where we're stuck right now here in the United States. One last story, and we're going to get to the Reddit plug. Let me copy this out. Come on, web browser, copy the address. I gotta find a better way. Like, what I should do is copy the stuff in plain text, because the chat gets real slow once I start like copying links, and I haven't been able to figure out why. Let's get that sent. I'm gonna reset the chat here real fast. So, things to be concerned about: news block. Super frustrating. This story isn't going to be any better. We as technological enthusiasts, as techies, as tech fans, tech geeks, tech nerds, and especially as being fairly international. One of the reasons why I like hosting this as a live stream is getting some viewpoints that aren't just North American centric. I feel we can learn a lot from each other, especially we can learn a lot about what not to let our politicians do. We're going to be running into some major cultural clashes in the coming years as governments start to examine how other governments handle the data, the security, and the privacy of their citizens. This is going to be a very difficult conversation for us to have as we look at mixed markets and how we do business internationally through humongous data-centric corporations that have their own interests that don't always align with local governments. So a company might be an American company, but they have a headquarters in Ireland to dodge taxes, and then they dump money in the Cayman Islands so they don't even have to pay Ireland the taxes they weren't going to pay to the United States, but they're made in America. One of the other conflicts, and this is a sensitive one because there are very different cultural mores between us and, say, the people of China. Again, I mentioned it last week on the show. There's a phenomenal documentary that I completely forgot to look up the name of, but it's a glass manufacturing plant that gets bought out by a Chinese corporation. And there's this huge culture clash between what the Chinese expect of workers and labor on the ground versus what Americans expect for compensation and lifestyle. And this is going to be a very difficult fight to fight. So when I see a story like this, this is coming by way of CNN, not always the best outlet for covering tech. China fears young people are addicted to video games. Now it's imposing a curfew, written up by Eric Chung. Out of Hong Kong, China has announced a curfew on online gaming for minors among new measures aimed at curbing video game addiction. The official government guidelines will be applied to all online gaming platforms operating in the country, most notably Tencent, the world's biggest gaming company. Under new rules, gamers aged under 18 will be banned from playing online games between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. On weekdays, minors can only play for 90 minutes, while they may play up to 3 hours per day on weekends and public holidays. I come from a very Western perspective, a very liberal Western perspective, and I have a very hard time with that idea. I disagree with a state-run government being able to interfere with how a parent might decide to raise their child. There is a kernel of concern for parents who might not be able to keep up with the modern social pressures of a plugged-in society. I think we see the effects of that here in the United States. I think we definitely see the effects of that worldwide. But I still don't believe that grants the state special permissions to insinuate themselves in between a parent and child. Obviously, this is a complicated spectrum of gray, because I have sort of advocated for other situations where the government might get involved that I'm sure other people disagree with me, like loot boxes. I believe loot boxes are gambling, and I don't believe that parents are equipped to fully to fully examine and educate their children on all of the ramifications of addictive behavior. And if the video game industry doesn't do a better job of properly age rating things like loot boxes and gambling mechanics, then I do believe that the government would need to get involved. So this is why I find myself in that conflicted space. If there is a concern over addictive behavior in online entertainment, one of the resources we have at our disposal to address that is government action. But what I see and what I see here with the Chinese solution feels overly punitive and very aggressive, and I don't know that I would ever agree with that level of direct action, control, and manipulation of the populace. I don't know what helps us fix this problem. If we can point to what the problem might be, I don't know what corrective action would be appropriate. I don't believe this is the right corrective action. From Soulless Geek, to my mind, should be the parents' responsibility. Bowangbite. I'm going to need to look this up. It sounds like Korea's gaming curfew law, but a bit crazier. I don't know. Because again, I mean, like, South Korea is like one of the originators or progenitors of the esports the esport community that we understand it today. From 20 Miles 1975, I'm with you, man. I know it's not my place to criticize other governments and cultures, but no way I'd ever be okay with that level of oversight and control. And Sam and I just had a conversation. Like, this is something that I'm very concerned about, is how do I introduce gaming to my daughter? She's been allowed to play a couple little, like, PBS games for very, very brief periods of time while I'm using the phone with her or sitting with her. And she's seen. What was the first? The first one was... So because I still don't have a Nintendo Switch, I really need to get a Nintendo Switch. The first game that I think my daughter actually paid attention to Marie and I playing was the Crash Bandicoot Kart Racer. Total knockoff of Mario Kart, but with Crash Bandicoot characters instead of Mario and Nintendo characters. But she saw us playing that and she wanted to race with us, and I sat her in my lap and she hadn't yet turned four, and I had her move the joysticks and I was pushing the buttons, and it was this lovely moment. Like, it's a social game with a social component, and we all played it together as a family. And Sam in our Discord was sharing a very similar story with WoW, you know, and how his family got interested in playing MMORPGs. I kind of feel like that's, in my brain, like, that's got to be a major part of the solution, is interaction and education and sharing these experiences. But again, I would worry that a state-sponsored curfew on that would maybe get in the way of how I would want to express gaming as a culture and gaming as a lifestyle to my daughter, and really highlight the types of experiences that I think are valuable and try and steer her away from some of the experiences that I find predatory. From Fat Produce, the problem with these sorts of laws is that even if a government at present is benign in its intentions, that doesn't mean that in the future a government couldn't turn malicious with this sort of control. And then also, it speaks to some of the cultural issues that I think we're going to have hard conversations about when it comes to things like, how is a population of people being observed? Because I think if you were going to try and enact something similar here in the United States, it would be fairly toothless. Oh, if you're under 18, you can't play these games. Well, we know there are a bunch of 10-year-olds fragging folks in very mature games that they shouldn't be allowed to play. We have this whole licensing thing, you know, it's a rated M, a rated adults only, and we know kids are playing those games too. So here in the United States, from a Western perspective, like, okay, yeah, make that law, but no one's going to follow it, and it's not really going to be possible to enforce it. And I think one of the things that makes me so uncomfortable about the Chinese approach is they probably have better tools to observe and enforce. And that's definitely something I don't want to have happen here. Oh, if you don't have anything to hide, why would you be afraid of letting the government watch everything you do? Well, because of stuff like this. Because of how they can then start to manipulate and to enforce what content I'm allowed to interact with and what content I can share with my kids. I'm not doing anything illegal, but they could still make my behavior undesirable. And that makes me very anxious about how we're going to cross-pollinate different ideas of privacy and security and government policy for the greater good of our community. And that's tough. Soulless Geek. This is great. I let my grandson play top-down runners as a reward because it helps hand-eye coordination. Twitch games. You know, again, like, I almost want to, like, make my daughter grow up in gaming the way I did. So, like, Lex, if you want to play games that your friends are playing, you got to start with the Atari. When you can beat everything I beat on the Atari, then I'll let you play Contra. But I mean, like, my mom can still kick my ass in a game like Tempest. Like, it's not even close. And I am so lucky that I get to have that as a multi-generational approach. Like, my mom flew out here to Southern California to do a Mother's Day special where we had a Tetris showdown. And she still almost crushed me. I was training to hang with her, and it was close. I want to be able to share that with my daughter. Like, that's going to be really valuable to me, and I kind of don't want anyone in my way. 20 Miles, 1975. My first console was Intellivision in 1979. Ugh, I'm old. Soulless Geek. We're starting to get some controls with things like mesh networks able to kill individual devices and some family stuff built into operating systems, but I don't think it needs to go further than that. We just need to educate the parents about those options. That I absolutely... See, and that's... That's why I hope we can have more tech philosophy kinds of conversations, media literacy, education for people who aren't in the scene, lapsed gamers. Like, maybe you grew up playing Nintendo. Maybe you stopped playing Super Nintendo. And then when your kids are getting into gaming, you think it's still kind of like Nintendo. And the gaming industry has moved on from there. And that's where I feel like we've maybe let down the normies. We haven't really brought them along for the ride on this stuff. So because this podcast is always running long, and again, I appreciate you all so much, because this was a very frustrating news block to put together, especially because we talked about the news for an hour. And I'd like to cover some other fun stuff instead. Mr. Pulp Fiction, did you play on the Sega Dreamcast? So I did not own one, but Dreamcast was end of high school, early college for me, and I used to game on my friends so much, and I wanted one so bad, and I could never afford one. Actually, throughout most of that, I had finally built up a PC that was decent enough to play like games like Diablo. And in that late high school, early college, I almost ruined my entire life on Diablo 2. You know, people talk about WoW addiction. I was grotesquely overweight. I was failing out of my classes. I was not eating well. I was not sleeping at all. And for like a good solid year of Diablo 2, I was the poster child of, hey, parents, don't let your kids play video games. I think a lot of us have to run into one of those situations and then pull ourselves out of it so that we get a sense of, this is what I love about this. This is what I'm passionate about. These are also the controls that I need to put on myself so that I know not to let that happen ever again. But again, because I had put so much money into a PC and that was for school and for work and for gaming, I unfortunately had like zero disposable income for other, I mean, I went a long time. I was going to say from N64 to, wow, it was N64 to PlayStation 3 before I owned a game console again. It was a big window. And actually, I probably wouldn't have gotten the PlayStation 3 if my wife hadn't needed a PlayStation for work. Because again, it's a work device. It's a tax write-off. All right. Quick plug. It's not going to be quick. I'm going to try and make it quick, but you know it's going to take a while. We spent a lot of time this podcast talking about YouTube, the problems on YouTube, the challenges for YouTube content creators, and there is something we can do as viewers. If we are fans of content, if we are fans of channels, the best thing we can do is organically participate and share and contribute to those channels outside of letting the algorithms try and do all the heavy lifting for us. One solution I hope you consider, the thing that I made a thing, and I'm trying to put my money where my mouth is. Every podcast you listen to likely has some kind of subreddit. Sometimes the subreddits are there to have people tell them how clever and awesome they are. Sometimes the subreddits are there to share news stories. My subreddit is a way to celebrate people you think deserve more attention. It could be a smaller content creator really trying to get their numbers up to monetize their channel. It could be a blogger, an editorialist, a writer, but something in the tech community. The only rule is it's got to be vaguely tech. Or it could also be someone who is an established commentator, but maybe they aren't doing as well or they aren't getting as much attention as they deserve. I've talked about numerous examples in previous podcasts. So the project that I put together, 2014, I put together a subreddit, and that failed miserably. And over this last year, I've tried to do a better job of highlighting it and building it up. But it's reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And I'm dropping the link in here so that you guys can check it out. If you want to self-promote your own videos, you can share your own videos. It's usually a big no-no on Reddit. I want people to find new content, but mostly, more than anything else, we need your comments, we need your upvotes, and we want to see if we can turn this into a community that helps elevate channels that deserve more attention. So if something's popular on Our Glowing Rectangles, it's got a better chance of hitting a larger subreddit or finding a bigger community and getting shared and spread. And that's what a true viral success really is. Not just, I kind of had some popular keywords in my video on YouTube, and then YouTube promoted it for a hot minute, and then YouTube destroyed my channel metrics when my next video wasn't as popular. If you go to your YouTube feed, you're going to see sort of a homogeny of topics. It's going to be a very limited focus of what's the most popular, what's trending, and what's hot. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and you've never been before, I guarantee you, you're going to find someone you've never seen. You're going to see a broader variety of community discussion. You're going to see a broader variety of different viewpoints, different regions, different reviewers, different editorialists. You're going to find someone. And you're going to find someone you didn't know about, and you're going to like the stuff that they make. But if you want them to keep making stuff, we've got to help. We've got to be active participants. We can't just passively view and go, oh, that was cool. I hope they make another video. Give them a share. Give them a tweet. Give them an upvote. Some mouse or touchscreen interaction is going to help so much for someone who's building a channel or someone who's trying to sustain a channel. So these are the top stories on Our Glowing Rectangles this week. I'm going to go back into screen share, but the first one we don't have to spend too much time on because this guy occasionally makes it on the list. And I think we would all agree that if you were to meet this guy in person, you would walk away from the encounter going, man, that guy's got a punchable face and I hate his hats. But the number one video is the OnePlus 7T review by some gadget guy. It's very rare that I top the charts on my own subreddit, but apparently this video was enjoyed. The second video is the person I'm feuding with this week, the knockdown dragout fight over networking, but his video on the Exynos. Exynos 990 versus Exynos 9830 versus Exynos 980. Gary Explains, and you should definitely be giving Gary a follow. If you like explained videos that are worth actually explaining, so much of tech YouTube, explained videos are not worth explaining. Bluetooth explained, and then they get a bunch of stuff wrong. when Gary explained something, and, you know, like, I got a lot of negative comments when I shared that editorial that I wrote about networking benchmarking. A lot of people on the internet do not like it when someone who is actually knowledgeable chips away at some of the preconceived ideas we have about technology. I love Gary because he's actually very engaging and a friendly educator, but he's not going to sugarcoat when people have relied on faulty reasoning or bad ideas to talk about tech. So especially like when he went after app speedruns, I could have kissed that man on the mouth because they're popular and they're fun to watch, but they're very poor testing for any kind of real world phone performance. So, again, if you want explained videos on topics that are worth explaining, you got to give Gary a follow. From Kazjegizo on the Periscope, Gary is awesome, really informative. Aditya Anil, some punchable face guy. Aditya Anil, hashtag has a thing for Gary guy. I absolutely do. And lastly, again, this is just like my list of bromance channels for the third spot. TK My Bay. TK takes a look at the 2019 NVIDIA Shield TV Pro top 5 things to do when you get it. It's a tips and tricks video looking at how to set up the NVIDIA Shield TV. TK's my buddy. TK's my bro. Again, we were both looking out for each other here in Southern California. He was texting me during those last round of fires. I was texting him on the fires before. Really good guy. I mean, just a really good guy. And again, just as a general trend, he's a guy that takes his process and his method very seriously. So, he built up his rep going through XDA developers and doing things like flashing and digging in deep into the software on different phones. And it's a reputation well-deserved that you can trust what TK has to say about any gadget he might get his hands on. Boing Byte, hashtag TK My Bay. But Aditya Anil totally has it. No, hashtag TK Our Bay. 20 miles, 1975. Sorry, Juan. TK is ours to share. Yeah, I stand well and deservedly corrected. TK Our Bay. From Kazyegizo. TK is very knowledgeable. XDA rules. I spent a big chunk of this weekend on XDA trying to get my AT&T LG V30 flashed over because AT&T was terrible for supporting that phone. For Mr. Pulp Fiction, were you a modder on XDA developers? So I've been getting a little bit more into it just because of the number of phones I get that don't seem to have good carrier support for updates. And I've got to find ways to get around the lack of a carrier update to get the phone properly updated to what the manufacturer put out. LG is the best example of that, where the LG V30 Pi update is really good. But only a handful of LG V30 users got it because of terrible policy by carriers like AT&T. I was way more into modding and ROMing and flashing back in the Windows Mobile days. I actually used to hold records for overclocking IPAC PDAs way back in the day. I don't do it as much anymore. Now it's just an out of necessity. And I'm going to be trying to check out other things too. Like I've got a couple old HTCs and I want to see how Lineage has aged on those older phones, because I feel like an HTC M8 would probably still be a fine daily driver with a great headphone jack for someone today if it had any kind of up-to-date software, is my hypothesis. So that's the plug. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Please give it a follow. Check it out. We as a tech viewing community can do more to help make sure that we are getting the best quality and diversity of content that we want. if we let YouTube decide for us that only four or five tech commentators are worth subscribing to, then tech commentary gets really boring and the tech landscape gets really dull. So again, reddit.com/arp/glowingrectangles is my personal platform to try and put my money where my mouth is, to try and improve that situation for everyone who wants to participate. From Train916, wasn't the M8 and a Snapdragon 808 phone? It was not. The HTC One M8 was an 805, I believe. I don't think it was an 800. I want to say it was an 805. The M9 was a Snapdragon 810, and that was way worse. So the One M9 and the LG G Flex 2 got wrecked by the Snapdragon 810. That was a terrible chipset. And the 808 was only marginally better. Oh, no. Okay, Fat Produce. The M8 was an 801, not an 805. Okay, so it was an 801. The 801 and the 805, much better performers than the 810. And yeah, from 20 Miles 1975, the M9 is garbage. It's real bad. Few phones run as hot and as terribly as any of the Snapdragon 810s. All right. So, that wraps us up on all of the news and all of the plugs. I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week because our show ran stupid long last week. And this is going to go over the 2-hour mark this week too, because I want to catch up on one phone we didn't talk about and then talk about one phone I just started using and then talk about one phone that I just got and I'm going to start using. And then I also want to do some mailbag posts. So I want to start off, what we missed last week was the LG G8X. Lots of videos have already come out. Lots of reviews have already put it out there. I need to open it back up and log back in. And the dual screen is off for some reason. But dual screen, folding phones. If you're a multitasking nerd, if this is something where you're looking at how to maximize and expand on the ability to coordinate and have different things happening on your phone at the same time, this has been a really interesting phone to dive into. First, I've already put out a video showing the refinements. So I got to spend time with the South Korean LG V50 dual screen, and there's a lot that's improved on the experience here for the G8X. So go catch that video. I have a bad habit of regurgitating my talking points in my podcast. The video is going to put it together for you faster than if I just talk about it here. But we've got a good palette. We've got the ability to split screen and dual screen different apps. And at its core, we still have an LG G8 style experience. So you've got the dual rear cameras. You've got the absolutely phenomenal, best in class headphone jack. Again, if you care about your ears and you want the best variety of audio listening experiences available to you, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you're a fan of their hardware, but unfortunately, LG is the only game in town. Even Samsung is walking away from one of the most universally useful ports that we can have on a phone. And again, you might think that we don't need it, but you're wrong. So one of the major takeaways, again, I've seen this mentioned on other videos too. One of the things that I wasn't quite prepared for, I didn't know this was going to be a part of the G8X, is this is LG's new UI. And this is going to be a major part of my review here, because I think LG puts out some of the worst UI in all of mobile phonedom. I adore LG hardware. And as soon as I get an LG phone, I put Nova launcher on it, and I pretend that LG didn't make a terrible, terrible, terrible launcher. So this is LG's new UI, and I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you notice any similarities with maybe another South Korean manufacturer? Like when you pull this notification shade and all of your shortcuts and quick actions go all the way down to the bottom chin, or like when you pull up your settings and they're sort of divided in these fun, bubbly little settings in containers. Maybe you notice that's similar to another one, or the way that we still have the vertical swipe on the app drawer, which then turns into horizontal swipes for your apps. I mean, just is anyone there noticing some similarities in design? Is that anything is registering? This feels very Samsung-y to me. I am not the biggest fan of Samsung's UI, their new UI, Samsung UIX or whatever they're calling it. I have the same concerns and criticisms. I don't like overly bubbly, lots of wasted space. Like when I pull up a settings, my settings on the phone, I want a small stacked list of all of my settings in one easy to see screen view. I don't want big, bubbly, friendly, space-wasting settings that I scroll through and I have to try and find, like, what's the icon that's going to take me to this menu that then is going to open up this setting that then I can alter. It's one of the things I really do like about, like, stock AOSP Android is it's just text and buttons. It's not trying to hold your hand through that kind of stuff. It's funny because on the one hand, this is not a UI that I enjoy. I'm still probably going to put Nova Launcher on the main LG G8 phone. It doesn't Nova Launcher doesn't know to use the second screen. So you'll have like a weird like split UI, and it'll work for me because I'm that dork, but I wouldn't recommend other people do it. But I don't like Samsung's UI. At the same time, if you have been using LG devices, I kind of feel like this is going to be a huge improvement over LG's stock software. If you're on LG's UI and you haven't installed another launcher, Microsoft Launcher, Nova Launcher, any of the other solutions there, I think you're going to dig this. I think this is going to be a welcome improvement over what you've been using in the past. So it's just kind of funny that, you know, again, it can still be an improvement for so many people. And for me, it's definitely not what I would like to use on a phone. from Fat Produce, I'm super interested to hear your thoughts on the ROG Phone 2 software in comparison to the OnePlus, LG, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see. Mr. Pulp Fiction, stock Android is a little bit boring. The thing is, I, as I've gotten older, I'm not looking for the phone to entertain me. I definitely jive with like old school Steve Jobs, some of the commentary he used to have about the phone getting out of your way. The phone itself, I want that to blend into the background, and I want the services I use on the phone to be front and center. So when the UI starts getting bubbly and friendly and hand-holding and here are extra menus and we've organized this and look at what your apps do and isn't this scrolling really nifty, less and less do I enjoy that. Like I'm increasingly of the mind the phone should be as boring as possible so that I can do the fun things I want to do on the phone. And that's not going to be for everybody. That is my solo and solitary opinion on the matter. Other people absolutely will disagree with me. And that may be, you know, transitions and animations and the way that the phone sort of reveals that to you could be part of the entertainment and part of the value of owning a phone. For me, like, more than anything else, I start disabling stuff. You know, even animated wallpapers sometimes, like, nope. Give me a blue gradient. Actually, that's what I ended up doing here. Just blue gradient and no interesting background because I want nothing to compete with the shortcuts on my phone or the widgets that I might use. Like, I want my eye to be drawn as efficiently as possible to the thing that I want to do next on the phone. I'm getting kind of severe, but a part of this is because I also have to handle so many different phones and UIs and operating systems, and software gets messy when you're flipping your phone every month. So the thing that I think has been kind of interesting is people have been used to wallet style cases, right? So you go out in public and you'll see people, and you're like, oh, they're kind of using their phone like this, like it's a little book. So this doesn't scream. It doesn't advertise. It doesn't do a good job of broadcasting that there's anything different happening here. But I've gotten a number of real world interactions, kind of like back when I was using the Honor 8, that someone notices that, oh, the phone is doing something different if they happen to peek over my shoulder. What I think is kind of funny is one of the more telling experiences, I let my wife take this to work because she had a coworker who was considering buying the G8X. She was thinking, maybe I want a Pixel and I want to keep it simple, or maybe I want something really cool. And when she put this phone in her coworker's hands, after about 10 minutes, she wasn't really digging the second screen experience. That it was super cool. It was way more functional. There was all this stuff that she could do. And she just really didn't like wallet style interactions. Like, oh, every time I need to do something on the phone, I'm going to need to open this and then unlock it with like an in-display thumbprint. That might interrupt my day more than if I just had a regular phone. So that's going to be one of the interesting things, I think, to follow or to track. As we get into folding phones, as we get into more modular devices, the sort of daily maintenance and the in-the-hand maintenance, I think is going to be a tough thing for some consumers to figure out. I know for a fact that a not insignificant number of G8X consumers are going to use this for a couple days, just like they got it, because you get the second screen for free. Then they're going to say, you know what, let me just try what it's like using the phone as a regular phone, and then we're going to see a bunch of G8Xs in just regular cases. I don't know if it's going to be most. I don't know if it's going to be some, but a not insignificant number of G8X owners are going to end up here. Just like a number of Note consumers will probably never pull the S Pen after the initial novelty of trying out an S Pen. There's a part of this that I hope we can study, that we can pay attention to, where this is really cool and this is really fun. But from Mr. Pulp Fiction, I'm always using a black wallpaper on my phone. I used to do just straight black. Now I kind of like just like a little bit of a gradient. So if it's black to gray, or if it's blue to black or something like that, I like having a little bit of a shift. From Hudless Hero, a slide out screen could be neat. Again, I like the idea of rigid displays. I'm still not sold on foldable plastic displays, but something like that could be cool. And again, I wouldn't mind having an option, another mainstream option for a sliding keyboard. There's something really cool about having one whole screen for your content and then the second whole screen for inputting text or inputting content. That's really nice. Again, there's so much more room, so much more space for activities. moving right along. Okay. So G8X, I have the second screen video out now. I'm gonna be wrapping up a review. But first, I think I'm also gonna do just a quick tangent video: the G8X versus the old school G8, because adding the second screen changes a lot on the phone. So I feel like I was writing out the full review. I was like, oh, I could just do like a little quick part of my review will be a back and forth comparison. And then that ended up being like 4 minutes of me talking all on its own. So instead of putting in a 4 minute comparison in a review, I'm just going to make it a separate video. So that's going to be out this week. I don't know if I'm going to be done with the full review for this phone this week or if it's going to be out next week, but it'll be out soon. And spoilers, it's pretty positive. Most of this is done really well. And for a very specific consumer out there, this is going to be an amazing experience. And even for general consumers, it's a great bang for buck. So until you can see the full pros and cons and all of my criticisms and praise, that's at least where we can start the discussion there. Mr. Pulp Fiction, do you try to hide the notch with your wallpaper? When I'm using the phone, I try and go back to just a regular forehead. When I'm showing the phone off in a review, I try to use notches and wallpaper so you can see the notch. So you can actually see what the dimensions of the screen are. But even when I try to hide the notch, you can't really hide it. It's always there. And when you full screen certain videos or certain games, it cuts into the content. It's not as bad as an iPhone, but it's still, the notch is such a dumb adaptation to disrupt the display to include a crappy webcam. So, I don't know. Moving right along. Okay. Soulless Geek, can you verify that there's no quad DAC in the G8 series? No, the quad DAC is in the G8. I don't know about the G8S, but it's in the G8 and the G8X. Here, let me just open it. Well, I might need to get some headphones to plug in here. Let me get my monitors. I think these will clear the case, will they? Yeah. Pardon the interruption here, but I need to plug another podcast I'm working on with my buddy Andrew. The Geek Book Club is a monthly podcast, which is also an online book club, which should not come as a surprise given the name of the podcast. We pick a book, we read it, and then we talk about it, and you can also join the conversation. If you want a good geeky chat about your favorite geek literature, join Andrew Wallace and I every month on the Geek Book Club, available on iTunes, Google Play, and other fine podcasting services. Settings. Hold on, let me just pull it out of the case. That is one of the bummers. You can catch that in the case video. This is amazing audio podcasting. Yeah. DTS X 3D surround sound and hi-fi quad DAC. Right there at the bottom. It's right there. Since the G7, all even international G-series phones have had the quad DAC. That hasn't changed. Hudless Hero, shill out some IEMs. Well, I love my Mi Audio, and KZs are pretty good, and apparently Tin Audio are great, and CCA. CCA makes some great earbuds too, and then all of the mainstream manufacturers too. You can't go wrong with Shure's or Sennheiser's or any of them other players. How many IEMs do I have? Too many to count. Just the Mi Audio lineup alone, I have five pairs of IEMs from Mi Audio, two pairs of Nobles, and those Nobles are old. Like, I used to use those on set. So what that would have been, I've been using those since 2014, 2013. My Shures are even older. So I've got the 115s and the 215s. I'm missing some. Like, I've got some other pro options in there too. Oh, my Eddies. I also had a pair of Edimata. Eddie. I call them Eddies because I can't say the company name. So yeah, lots of different options. I also got Simgots. I've got Ecos. And more. let's shift over. The other phone that is kind of taking me, I'm a fan of Sony. I feel like Sony and LG both got done wrong this year by a lot of the tech commentators out there. Finally getting to break out the Xperia 5. It's the smaller, friendlier version of the Xperia 1. It does not have the UHD resolution display. This is a 21:9 1080p panel, but it's a very good 1080p OLED. But it is one of the few phones to offer a true premium professional camera mode. So being able to like fire up a phone camera, which looks a lot and functions a lot like a Sony Venice, like a production grade camera, and how it handles shutter speed and how it handles white balance, how it handles focus. And something that they didn't have on the Xperia 1, which I maybe will come in a software update, This is one of my new favorite features on a phone is a programmable rack focus. So you put in your close focus and you put in your far focus, and then you tell it how long you want the rack to take. And then when you're recording, you just push a button there and it goes zzzk, and it locks on the focus. And then you push another button and it goes zzzk, and it locks you back. And it's so smooth. It works so well. Again, there's no reason why phones shouldn't have this kind of functionality if the argument is you can really make things with your premium phones. So over the Friday, I didn't get to go on Saturday, but Sony was running an event at Sammy's Cameras here in Southern California, and it was mostly focused on Sony Alpha. So like their mirrorless cameras, interchangeable lens systems, professional grade cameras for stills and for video. But I went and did some of the workshops. It was a lot of fun. One of the workshops actually did talk about making films on Xperia phones. And so it's a new project. I'm going to give it a shot while I still have this phone. I probably will need to send this back to Sony at some point. But the guy running that workshop is a cinematographer. He's worked with James Cameron. He's done a bunch of feature films. He's done a lot of even just like low budget and indie stuff. And he pulls out his Xperia 1, and it's got this giant step-up ring cutout in the case so that he can attach ND filters. One of the problems with a phone camera is it's really hard to control light and keep your shutter speed the same. And so that's going to be my next project. Like, I want to find a way, how can I make a filter, like an actual camera filter, screw on to my phone? So like, that was one of the fun takeaways from doing all of these workshops. It's just like, oh, now I've got a project. Because I kind of want to see, like, is this something I can really do on a phone and make it work and start producing even more content from phones? But early impressions on the Xperia 5, I really liked the Xperia 1. There are a few compromises in using a UHD displayed phone, with Sony always putting in the smaller battery so that they can attain this, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey monolith thin kind of build quality. Like, every time I put this up in a stand or I prop it up on my desk, I expect little monkeys to like start throwing bones at it. As it then teaches us how to evolve. I mean, it's a monolith. But I used it all day at Sammy Cameras. I got about let me just break down the numbers. This is what's going to be in the review on the Xperia 5. The first day I had it, I didn't fully set it up. I had to set it up on LTE. So it's hitting the cell network harder, usually set up over Wi-Fi. I took it off the charger at 6 a.m. Friday morning, and I did not plug it back in until I got a low battery warning the next day at around 1 p.m. So it went from 6 a.m. Friday morning all day at Sammy's Camera, shooting a couple little snippets of video, doing a ton of social media. I was on Twitter and Discord and checking my email all day long. I didn't plug it in overnight, so it discharged about 4% overnight while I slept, and then I ran it the same again in 90 degree heat while I was shooting on the Pixel 4 for my camera review. This was my actual phone, and it went all the way up till around 1 p.m. where I got the low battery warning at like 13% battery. Yeah, Sony could use bigger batteries. Is that really going to be a problem? No. The Xperia 5 was a plenty capable daily driver phone, and I have high hopes that Sony Xperias will age gracefully because of the way that Sony has put in their stamina mode, and they have a special battery conditioning mode that doesn't trickle charge your phone all night. So I'm early impressions using it over the weekend, very positive. I very much enjoyed what the Xperia was able to do out in the field. And the camera is phenomenal. The camera app is a true pro grade camera app. I haven't found anything that would say, oh, Sony should stop making phones. This is exactly the kind of experiment and the change that I would like to see. And plus, it's just nice having a phone that's not ridiculously wide. So, you know, we're making fun of Sony for 21x9, but Samsungs are 19.5x9. LGs, some of the LGs are 19.5x9. The OnePlus 7T, which gets great scores for screen and usability, is 20 by 9, and we're pretty sure that next year Samsung is going to move to a 20 by 9 phone also. So from 20 by 9, that's amazing. 21 by 9, oh, that's terrible. No, I like it. I like it a lot. And especially when you watch, like, again, while traveling, I did get to do, like, one short little trip with the Xperia 1. And I was watching classic movies, like those old Panaflex, Panavision, wide vistas. And that screen is so good. And even for films that aren't shot wide like that, if the framing is good, it looks amazing on the Xperia 1. So I think a good example is Aliens. When you watch the movie Aliens, it's closer to 16 by 9. That's the full frame. But when you fill the screen in 21 by 9, James Cameron's cinematography holds up in that crop. And it's perfectly framed to follow you to 21 by 9. So then it's filling the whole phone with Aliens, the screen. It's great. I mean, it's really nice. So this is going to be the next like full review process. I'm going to be doing the audio tests, the speaker tests. I'm not going to do a full deep dive camera review because the camera system, and Sony even said, like I did a conference call with Sony and they were like, well, no, it's exactly the same as the Xperia 1, but the Xperia 5 is running newer software than what's currently out for the Xperia 1. So it'll be a little bit more like the addendum that I did for the V50 and for the OnePlus 7T. Samples are going to be largely the same, but some new features are coming that we should talk about. Because if you care about trying to make something mobile, Sony and LG are really the top games in town right now. Very, very good stuff. Very, very happy. So let me scroll down here. For Matt Tyler, Xperia 1 is the flagship. Xperia 5 is mid-range. But what are Sony going to do after the flagship hits Sony Xperia 4? I mean, like, no, I would say Xperia 1 and 5 are the flagships. I mean, this is still an $800 phone, so it's not cheap. What was the Xperia 10 was the mid-range, and then there was another... I mean, again, Sony, not the best at naming their products. Gary the Fireman, what about Moment and Mr. Pulp Fiction open camera? So here's... I would put that question right back out to you. Let me show you on the Xperia 5. I open my camera app. So again, I have full control over ISO, shutter speed, white balance, and I can manually rack focus. When you use Open Camera or Moment or Filmic is another pretty good third-party camera app, can you control all of those settings with very similar color science on all three lenses on a phone? So like if I want to control shutter speed, white balance for the ultra wide, I set it and there's the ultra wide. And then this is also shooting, they call it HDR, but it's really more, what is that, HLC? But again, sort of like a high dynamic range, but not HDR super juicy. But they use the Venice color science, which is pulled directly out of the Venice camera. It's shooting in H.265, so it's super high quality video at a smaller file size. And you get all of that control over all three lenses with software stabilization, but the phone only shoots up to 30 frames per second. So it's cinema-based. This is not like Mojo. This is like if you want to make a movie, this would be, I think, one of the first phones to recommend. This or a V-Series LG. Like it's right up there. But yeah, I am just insane dynamic range. Full control over all three camera sensors, the ability to program a rack focus. I mean, third-party camera apps get us a lot closer to fully realizing that, but they don't always land the full way. Aditya Anil, Sony and LG, huh? Well, I know a particular YouTuber who films in 8K. Oh, 8K. When we're still waiting for everyone to catch up on 4Ks. Uh, From Train 916, scaling the text size way up on a narrow phone makes text messaging a joke. See, I kind of like having the taller screen, though, because every vertical app that you use has more room to use it. So, like, when I'm using an Xperia and I go through, like, Reddit, like, there's a ton of stuff there. I like having this layout for a vertical app better than 16:9, and especially for how easy it is to reach and to interact and to use, like, these, like, side screen gestures. And they actually do have, like, that little shrink one-handed mode. I mean, you don't really need it because the phone is so narrow. Even my stumpy thumbs can reach this phone, but it's... there are a lot of perks to 21:9 when you're using it on portrait-based apps. It's different, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. From Fat Produce, I still wish that we would see Android OEMs start to support plugging in your phone via USB-C to become your computer's webcam. That would be really cool. Again, I'm still shocked that, like, we have to jump through so many hoops and services to make that happen. But, I mean, it makes sense because the USB protocol for phones is MTP. And I don't know that it would be easy to shift it so that the phone would show up as a camera device and not a mass storage device. And then how many consumers would get confused when, oh, I plugged my phone in and it didn't work. And then my webcam started doing stuff. I get it, but I agree with you. I would like to have that functionality. Mr. Pulp Fiction, imagine Juan filming his vids in 21:9. What I need to do is start framing better so that if you watch in 21:9, it doesn't wreck, but that it's still a full 16:9 video. That's what I need to do. So on the docket also, I don't have much to share because I've literally just started setting it up, but I am doing a Patreon user exchange. I had the LG V50 with the dual screen case, and my buddy Matt Tyler had the ROG Phone 2, and we just thought it would be fun to kind of challenge each other to use our favorite phones, use each other's favorite phones of the year. Something I did with TK with the G7 back in the day, and Matt Tyler is currently using my V50, and I am currently using Matt Tyler's ROG Phone 2. So I haven't done much with it. I mean, like, I just got all of my apps installed. This is early days. I don't have much to say about the experience of having this phone other than it's a big chunky boy and thick phones are kind of fun. I don't think I've used a phone quite this big since, the Lenovo Fab. You remember those Fab Pros and the ones that had, like, Project Tango? So you would have, like, that 3D and AR mapping on the back. This is pretty close to that. It's a big chunk. But I'm very curious to see if Asus's software customizations and cooling hardware, because there is a big chamber in here that helps move heat out of the battery and the CPU, are going to have as appreciable a difference in performance as some of the other tricks that we've seen manufacturers go through. So if you're on the Patreon Discord, I've already disclosed the results of some of my tests. I forgot to pull this up. Hold on. I'm going to do a quick screen share here. But I had a lot of people complaining about my camera test, my video rendering tests, because only rendering 1 minute of video, well, that's not a real test of rendering video. So I took four phones. And let me window capture here. As you can see from left to right, I've got a V50, a OnePlus 7T, a Pixel 4 XL, and my Ace, and not my, Matt Tyler's Asus ROG Phone 2. So I thought, what would be kind of a good stress test? Like something that's really going to make a phone work. And I came up with doing just a movie transcode. So I've got a Blu-ray rip of A Fish Called Wanda, and I want to make that video more phone storage friendly. So it's almost like a 4:1 video compression to end up at a video file that's going to be smaller for a phone. And I'm having each one of those phones re-render an entire feature film, and I shot video of the entire process. So those four phones were important to me. The LG V50 has the 855, but it has a much improved thermal pipe. So LG put much better thermal hardware into that phone. The OnePlus 7T has an 855 plus, but it doesn't have any kind of thermal regulating hardware. The Pixel 4 XL also 855, no thermal hardware that we know of, but F2FS file system. So a different file system and Google optimization for that hardware. And then we get to the ROG Phone 2, 855 plus, thermal hardware, and wouldn't you know it, F2FS file system. So putting those four phones up against each other, we've got 855 thermal hardware, but EXT4. We've got 855 plus, no thermal hardware, EXT4. We've got 855, not plus, no thermal hardware, but F2FS. And then we've got everything. Thermal hardware, 855 plus, faster file system. And let them go. The movie is an hour and 48 minutes long. So it's going to re-render a 1 hour and 48 minute movie. And this is going to be fun. I'm going to put all of that together. I'm going to do a little talking about it. But again, like, we're talking about workloads that make laptops cringe. And we've got phones that are not only capable of completing these tasks, but are completing these tasks far faster than I think many consumers would expect that they'd be able to complete those tasks. So it's a fun race. And the results were not what I was expecting. I'm not going to tell you what I was expecting. You got to come back and watch the video. So that's going to be the deal. From Boeing Byte, did any of them catch on fire? No, thankfully none of them did. So far, the only battery catastrophes I've had in the gadget lab have been Samsung. So I had the Note 7 that they refused to let me send back. So I had to give the Note 7 back to the folks over at Pocket Now. And my Galaxy S6, S6 Active, Note 5 all had battery failures, with the regular Galaxy S6 puffing. So my Galaxy S6 looks like a burrito of a phone. The glass is barely hanging on to the forehead and chin of that phone. I've got LG G4s that still boot up fine. My V10 is still a tank. The only times I've been worried about a battery exploding in my office have been Samsung. So that's going to be a fun comparison. I'm not going to be doing super deep dive coverage on the ROG Phone 2, but I will be doing a light camera review, not a camera deep dive, and I will be doing an audio test. Because again, we've got good speakers and a headphone jack. So I want to see, Asus is usually really good at their audio. Like on top of the line Asus motherboards, we've got Saber DACs, which are made by the same company that make the Quad DAC for LG phones. So I've got very high expectations that this is going to be a good audio performer too, especially for gamers. You would think gamers would want good audio in their gaming products. But also, I want to be I don't want to be too nitpicky about this stuff, because I also want to get Matt his phone back. And I also want my V50 back. So I'm not going to hold on to it for too long. Let me get this out of the way here. So that wraps us up there. That's the phone tease. What are we at? Oof, we're at 11:20. All right, I'm going to hold the mailbag. I'm going to cut mailbag out of this podcast. And we'll come back to that next week. Because the one last thing I want to wrap us up with is a tease. If you're watching this channel in the United States, this is going to be a good tease. If you're watching this channel and you live outside of the United States, not as good of a tease. But there's a company that I really enjoy their products. And I did a recent review on one of their products, and they enjoyed the review. I gave him a positive review with some criticism, obviously. No products are perfect. And they're going to be hooking up an extra product for me to give away. This is going to be mostly a Twitter-based contest, but I want interaction. You know, I never like it to just be contest junkies who win my contests. So, you know, there's going to be the basic stuff like follow me and follow the brand and you get a point. But then if you do something kind of wacky, I'll give you 50 points to participate. So I just want to put the feelers out there that this Wednesday, the 13th, Wednesday the 13th, oh, spooky Wednesday the 13th, the spookiest Wednesday of all, I'm going to be setting up a contest link. I'm not going to be promoting that contest on YouTube because YouTube gets really weird about community strikes and violations on contest links. So you're going to have to find this contest link on somegadgetguy.com. That's where the contest is going to live. And I really wish I could tell you more about what it was that I was going to be giving away. Especially because, you know, like I don't want to be tethered to some kind of, you know, disclosure, and I don't want to be, you know, like cabled up and constrained by what it is that we're going to hook up a lucky winner with. I mean, it's a total mystery what it's going to be. I really wish I could share, but just I promise you, especially a contest of mine and a company, I really enjoy using their products. Maybe it's good for your ears, and maybe you might like using it while gaming, right? You know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know what else like I could tell you about what I'm going to give away. It's a mystery. It really is. And you know, you'll just have to tune in on Wednesday for what it is. So definitely be on the lookout for what it is I might give away. And major apologies to the folks listening to the audio version of this podcast, because that whole bit was totally wasted on you. And I'm still not going to say what it was. So, yes, major thanks to the brand that you'll figure out what that brand is. I really like this one. So the contest is going to start on Wednesday, and it's going to run to the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, because it's tech I'm thankful for. It's really good tech, and it's going to be a lot of fun to use. So that's coming this Wednesday. Be on the lookout for that. I've got my G8 versus G8X video. That's going to be coming out. I've got sort of a first look at the Xperia 5, using it out in the field. That's going to be coming out this week. I've got another gaming microphone. Another gaming mic product. I've got a super high-end, not super high-end. I've got a mid-range pair of headphones that are expensive for people who aren't into headphones and are sort of mid-range for people who are into extravagant headphones. That's going to be coming out on the channel this year, this week. I've got a lot of stuff coming up, so I hope you're along for the ride, because I think you're going to dig it. And again, major thanks to everyone out there who's been supporting and contributing and a part of this conversation and community. One of the things that I want to play with, and I'm not sure how to do it, I might even need to consult a lawyer. I have a ridiculous museum of old phones. I've talked about it on the podcast before. I've been going through and just kind of cataloging what I've got, and I actually have a fair number of duplicates. I don't know what the fairest and the safest, from a legal perspective, way to give those away might be. Some of them aren't even really functional. It would be like, if you want this just to kind of play with it, I would never recommend using this as an actual phone. If anyone out there in my community has any thoughts on that, I can't. And with good reason, I can't legally make that a giveaway on something like Patreon. Giveaways and contests need to be no purchase necessary, and the contributions that you have on Patreon make that more difficult. I do not want to make these like YouTube comment contests, because then it's just spam. Like, I don't get any benefit out of that. It's just people spamming my channel to give me free phone. But in talking about some of these things, like, I think I've got two HTC One M8s. You would never want to use an HTC One M8 as a real phone as a daily driver. But, you know, using an HTC One M8 as a media player could be kind of cool. Like, you just hook it up on over Wi-Fi, you could stream audio to it, you could download audio directly to it, and the headphone jack is pretty good. Fire up some boom sound, get some nice earbuds, and take the load off of a phone that you have that might not have a headphone jack in this day and age. I could rock two phones and use a One M8 as a media player. So I want to find a way to fairly give some of this stuff out there, to give it away. I want to write up articles about it, like, you know, do a museum post like, hey, this week we're going to look back on the HTC One M8 and how great it was. And Tim on Twitter wanted it to experiment with it, and I'm going to give it to Tim. That's kind of the community idea that I want to have for that. If anyone has any ideas on stuff like that, if there are any considerations to have for stuff like that, I've got some old Windows phones. I've got some old LG. You know, I've got way too many LGs. I can still keep my museum and still have some other stuff to give away. So again, I would absolutely appreciate some help. Maybe someone from more of a legal perspective to weigh in on this would be the way to phrase contest versus giveaway versus sweepstakes. This is what you might want to consider. If someone can point me to a link about laws in California, that would also be very helpful. And then also just some ideas, like, how do we promote something like this, but also make it more for the community? Like, again, not like I want to make this unfair, but if you're watching a live stream like this, you're more the person that I think would enjoy getting their hands on this than someone who's just got an egg icon as a Twitter profile and has nothing but contest links and contest shares with zero followers in their Twitter feed. So that would be my gig. Fat Produce, do you have any old Verizon-compatible Motorola phones? I don't, but I was so stupid excited. I got the Verizon LG Intuition? Is that what it was called? It was Verizon's attempt at making a proprietary Note. So it's a big square. I mean, it's like a 4:3 aspect ratio display, and it's got a stylus that came with it. And I was so ridiculously excited to get my hands on that phone this year. Like, I wanted that phone so bad when it came out. And playing with it today, it's like, oh yeah, there were actually some really good ideas here. Aditi Anil, big question. Do you have a spare Lumia 1020? I do not. And unfortunately, that will not be on the list. But I do have a spare Lumia 950. So camera's pretty good. The 950 camera is still pretty good. From Sam 20 Miles, dude, I'd take any Windows phone or Windows 10 mobile. I was going to buy a 1520 just to have one, even though Windows 10 mobile shuts down updates next month. They're so nice. Every time I pull one out, for me, it's the 920. I love my lime green European 920. There are so few phones. I mean, today we are just now getting to phones today that I feel feature-wise really do outperform what Nokia was doing 3-4 years ago. I mean, it's sad. From Boeing Bite, maybe just do a Twitch giveaway. You know what? That's a very good idea. Like, I need to look into what the rules are. Again, I need to be able to do this right because I don't want to do anything which might get a channel struck or suspended or shut down. I really don't have the flexibility to set that up in a way where I can learn by failing. I kind of need to learn by reading all up on all this stuff first and doing it right. Let's see, get this out of the way here. From Soulless Geek, I'd go for a Key One. I do have a spare BlackBerry. Ooh, we got some good stuff. Okay, something to consider, something to stew on. Your thoughts, your suggestions, your considerations, all very welcome, very appreciated. But we should probably wrap this up. Folks, Fat Produce, a Discord giveaway would be a problem because the Discord is tied to the Patreon. You can't really get access to the Discord without being a patron. So that means it violates FTC guidelines. So we can't do that. But yes, that's the kind of thinking and the kind of spitballing and ideas that I hope we can come up with, because I do want to find a solution for this, because I think it'd be fun. Old phones are still useful to some degree. And you know, it's something I did with TK. Like, I want to get more of these devices out there, because it's silly for me to just be sitting on some of these phones when they could be used. Anyway, folks, thanks so much for watching. I'm done talking now. No, but seriously, thank you for hanging in there because of how frustrating the news block was. And I still took longer on the news block than I really wanted to. Another shout out, another nod, just like I did with first responders and firefighters for Veterans Day. If you know someone in your circle of family and friends, if you know someone in your community, it's Veterans Day. And take that moment. I mean, you don't need to make a big scene out of it. I'm not going to put together a tweet and American flags and fighter jets flying over a football stadium. But you know, I'm going to make sure that my dad gets a video call from my daughter today. She's not going to know, but you know, it's like literally the least I could do. And it is a nice opportunity to check in and remember and to appreciate what some families have to sacrifice for other families. And that it's another opportunity for us to acknowledge that we are, as a culture, as a country, as a species, we really are all in this together. So, again, many thanks and much respect and appreciation. Folks, thanks so much for watching, for sharing my videos, for reviewing my podcast on whatever podcasting platforms you like to use to review podcasts, for sharing the topics that we talk about, and for participating on some of those other services too. Getting out there on the Reddits and leaving your upvotes and dropping your comments, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And, you know, again, picking fights with me on YouTube, especially from this community here. You're a lot more fun than the average YouTuber bear. So, folks, I want you to have a phenomenal week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I will catch you here next week on another episode, another Monday morning tech chat show. Be well. Take care. I love y'all. Catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.